Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we're going to demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. On today's episode, I talk with my cousin, Gwen Wilson. Gwen and her husband Mark went on many adventures, hiking, traveling, and camping with the family and as a couple once their children were grown. I've always enjoyed hearing about their adventures together. They are both incredibly good-natured people, and Gwen always has a way of finding humor in everyday interactions. It's no surprise that Mark's final journey involved the care of the whole family, with each participating in the way they felt most comfortable, and in the midst of the sorrow, a little something to laugh about. Hey, Gwen, so good to see you.
Sarah, it's so nice to see you.
I am delighted that you're here to talk with me about the home funeral that you held for your husband, Mark.
It was a wonderful thing for our family. It was absolutely the right thing to do.
I'd like to get started by asking a little bit about the person who passed. And so let's start by hearing a little bit about Mark.
So Mark was a wonderful man. He was brilliant. He was kind. He was a man without ego. Mm-hmm. And it was incredibly sad when he developed advanced metastatic prostate cancer. But we were able to be at home throughout his entire illness. He did live 7 years after his diagnosis. But he died literally in my arms in the front room of our home. And it was as good as it could have been for such a sad event.
Mm-hmm. You did quite a bit of traveling with Mark, and I know that even after his diagnosis, it was amazing how well he managed this terminal illness and traveled all over the world. And
it is true. We did a lot of traveling. It was important to us to do that. The other thing that was remarkable about Mark is that he loved to hike. And so he pushed himself to hike until he absolutely could not do it anymore. And I think that that was, as he became sicker, his greatest regret was his inability to hike and his inability to get down into the basement to his woodworking tools, because that was something he also loved to do. And I think he was sad because his children were all still relatively young, and he really loved his kids. He was a true family man.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you have four children.
I do. My oldest, now Mark died 5 years ago. So my oldest is 38, and then I have a 36-year-old, a 33-year-old, and a 30-year-old. So my 30-year-old was only 25 when she lost her dad.
Yeah, so sad.
It really is. He was such a good man.
So I know your family very well, obviously, since I am a member.
That's right, and since I have a daughter who's named for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, let's talk about Sarah.
So Sarah is 33. She has Down syndrome. And she currently is living with a family in Albuquerque and attending an art center during the day. She does wonderful art, in particular birds, and she does have a website where she sells her artwork. She was really close to her daddy, and doing the home funeral, I think, was absolutely the most beneficial thing for her, to allow her to understand and grieve her daddy's death.
I remember coming to your house, and I think hospice at that time had said, Mark has a couple of weeks to live. And so I came out to Gallup, New Mexico to be with you and the family. And Sarah was really hesitant to come. I know how it was really hard for her to see her dad that sick. And we had to do a lot of convincing to get her to come spend some time at the house with all of us.
Yep. And I remember when you sat down to first talk with her about what it would be like after Mark had died, and she wanted to see the transport box, and you took her out to the garage to show her the box.
Because I had told her that she could decorate the top of it, do some of her beautiful painting, and that would be one of the ways that she could be involved with his after-death care.
Right, right. And one of the funniest things you said in conjunction with that is you said, well, you can decorate the transport box and you can also put rocks inside it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not sure I want to put rocks inside a box that's already going to be pretty heavy.
So, you know, rocks came to mind just because of the fact that you and Mark were real rock hounds. He would always collect rocks for you that he would bring back home. But yeah, you know.
That's really true. That's really true. Whenever he wanted to know what kind of a gift to give me, I would say, just bring me another beautiful rock. And he would.
Exactly. So yeah, but you're right. It was not a great suggestion to put rocks in it.
You know, the kids did decorate the transport box. Sarah painted a cross on the top of it. And Rachel cut out maps of all the places that Mark had ever lived and put those on the box.
I love that. What a cool idea.
And then his mother died just a month before he died. We had a beautiful picture of Mark giving his mom a kiss. And so we also put that on the box. And what was fun about it is that when I eventually took Mark into Albuquerque, which is about 140 miles away, to the funeral home where they were going to do the cremation, the gentleman there had never before seen a decorated box. Mm. And it made quite an impression on them. They realized how much Mark was loved by his family.
That's really nice. So let's back up a little bit. Mark's dying at home. We get Sarah to come to the house, and everyone else in the family was there. And we had a conversation after dinner where I talked to her a lot about the dying process and what to expect and how we could care for him afterwards after he died, and gave her some details about that, trying to just alleviate some of the fears that she might have had in her own head of what dying and death look like, and that essentially he would look pretty much the same as he does now, you know, lying in bed where he's sleeping a lot, and he would just stop breathing. He wouldn't be seeing his chest rising and falling, and that it was still that we would care for his body. We would wash him and put on a clean t-shirt and, you know, just make sure that he was cared for. And she really got it. Like, she really understood that she could participate in a way that she hadn't considered before. And the following morning, I had agreed to take her back to Albuquerque. She was just going to come for one night. But after that conversation, she told me in the morning that she was going to stay and take care of her dad. And she did. And he lived for another 6 weeks.
Yeah, he did. He did. It was pretty amazing when he did pass. Three of the four children were here when it happened. And as I mentioned earlier, I was actually holding him when he died. My youngest daughter had suggested that I get into the bed with him because at that time he was receiving morphine and he wasn't in pain. And so I was able to move him over and climb in the bed and just hold him in my arms until he died. And after he passed, Sarah and my oldest son were very comfortable coming in and helping with the bathing process. My youngest daughter chose not to do that, which was just fine. I think that what's really important is that family members be allowed to do whatever they're most comfortable with. And she didn't want to see her dad after he had died. But Sarah was very interested in being a part of the process of bathing Mark and dressing him and laying him out. And in fact, the first night after he had died, she pulled a mattress into the room so that she could sleep in the room with him. And then that next day, she sat on a chair next to the bed with her head touching her daddy's head, and I think did a lot of her grieving and had the opportunity that she needed to say goodbye to her daddy.
It was really just so touching that she was able to sit vigil with him.
Right, right. It was wonderful. And for me, I could come in and just talk to him or, you know, touch him. It was interesting. We were supposed to take him into the funeral home after 2 days. And the kids said to me, "We're not ready, Mom." But by the third day, we were. So it gave us enough time to process and be with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing that about your visit before Mark died that was so helpful for me was talking with me about how to care for Mark's body after he had died. I had a lot of anxiety about that. And you reviewed with me what to do. And it turned out to be quite simple and not stressful at all to do. So putting the packs on his eyes just to keep his eyes closed and tying his jaws shut just for a short period of time were really all that we needed to do.
Did you use ice packs?
We did, but we didn't put the ice packs under the core of his body until late on the second day.
And it was absolutely fine. It is so interesting how intuitive most of this is, and we're just cautious about it because we haven't had that as part of our cultural practice for,
right,
for a while.
Yeah. Interesting living out here because the Navajo are not very comfortable with death as far as being around a dead body, but the Zuni are. And when my mother died, she was being cared for by a wonderful Zuni woman who came and did the most amazing job of wrapping my mother in a blanket. It was just kind of incredible. Because we kept my mom home too after she died, which was about 6 weeks after my husband passed. And one of the lovely things about that is that when my mother died, a number of my girlfriends rallied and they all came over to the house. And we sat in the bedroom with my mom, and I told stories about her always burning the lima beans and always using every napkin three times, once on the dining room table, once on the kitchen counter, and once on the kitchen floor before she threw it away. So that was, you know, that was really a special thing to be with my mom and be sharing the stories about her with my girlfriends.
Mm-hmm. Your girlfriends played a big role in helping you to move Mark into the transport box and out to the vehicle, right?
That's just right. Yeah.
I always
thought that Mark would enjoy knowing that the last trip of his life was in the arms of four women who carried him out to the car and just put him in the back of my Pilot. And then I drove him the 140 miles into Albuquerque. Also had a nice experience with the crematorium that we went to, in that they did not press me for anything that I wasn't interested in. And I was very grateful to them that I could say, nope, I don't need any of those things done.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had made all those arrangements in advance in anticipation of his death.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that made it very easy. I mean, we already had the transport box here stored in the garage. And so I was just able to call them and tell them that I was bringing Mark over. It was very nice. Mm-hmm. The cost was about a little bit more than $1,000.
And that included the box. You had picked that up at the crematorium several weeks earlier.
Right.
And that was a cardboard box?
It was a cardboard box, yeah. And then when I dropped Mark off, then I, sadly enough, picked up another one to bring home for my mom, because I knew that she didn't have long. So, but you know, the support system of my girlfriends was pretty amazing, because basically I didn't leave home for a year caring for both my husband and my mom. And it was a chore that was done with joy. I feel blessed that I was able to do it and that I was able to care for both of them at home, that neither of them had to go into the hospital ever.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other details about the home funeral that you'd like to share?
Well, I think that one of the things that amazes me is how few people know that that's an option. And I think it's so important that we get the word out to more people, because when I tell them my story, they are always just amazed and surprised. And I've had a number of people that have gone on to do home funerals after hearing my story.
That is so wonderful. And it's really just about making some of those arrangements in advance, communicating with the crematorium or with the cemetery, and knowing that you can do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. It changes, I think, the whole grieving process, not to have your loved one kind of whisk away by a mortician, you know, 10 minutes after they passed.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. With such an important way for my children and I to grieve. It was really the best that we could have done in a very sad situation.
Absolutely. And I love that you as a family were able to communicate that we're not ready yet. Let's wait one more day.
Right. Yeah, that was good. That was good. Mm-hmm. So there is one very funny story, Sarah. Mark died in October, and then my mother died in December. And I, of course, took her into the same crematorium in Albuquerque. And then about a month later, a friend of my husband died, and I was the person to call in the event of an emergency for that gentleman. And I contacted his siblings, who said that they wanted him cremated. So I called the crematorium and said, "Hi, this is Gwen Wilson from Gallup, New Mexico." And they said, "Oh, hi, Gwen. How are you?" He said, "Well, I'm bringing in another body." And the guys filled my car with gas when I got into Albuquerque, and then asked me if I wanted a job transporting bodies.
No kidding.
I said no, but thank you for the offer. So, but I think that it had made such an impression on them when we brought in that decorated box. And it turns out that the funeral home did not have a buy two get one free policy.
No,
we didn't ask about that.
Or a punch card.
Right. No punch card. No.
Bring in 10 bodies, you know.
Right, yeah. Get one free.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's funny.
One of the interesting things, though, that is a reality if you have a child with Down syndrome is sometimes when they have a traumatic event in their life, and the fact of the matter is that Mark's death was a traumatic event, they often replay it in their mind whenever the subject comes up. And so one of the things that has been challenging for me and for Sarah's siblings is that when we talk about Mark, Sarah will often get very tearful and recall all the events of the day of his death in much more vivid detail than I think that you or I would after this much time had passed. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of an interesting fact about individuals with Down syndrome that they do tend to replay these scenes in their mind with great detail.
Yeah. So I get that Sarah vividly recalls the events of the day that her father died, but I wonder if you can elaborate on your observations of how participating in his after-death care has helped Sarah's grieving process.
It's very interesting, Sarah, to make the comparison between when her grandfather died and when her dad died. Her grandpa died rather suddenly, and Sarah was not present when it happened. And she went through a very long and very difficult grieving process for her grandfather. And I think her grieving for her father was so different because she had been there to care for him before he died. She was there when he died. She was not frightened by his death. She was certainly saddened, but not frightened when she went into the room after he had passed. And it meant so much to her to engage in the aftercare, to be there to bathe her daddy, to anoint him with some scented oils, to help him get dressed and to lay him out. And I can't tell you how beautiful it was to see her the next day, sitting in the room with her head on the pillow next to her daddy's head, holding his hand, and just talking with him, being with him, saying goodbye. It was really quite a miraculous thing. And I think that then afterwards, she certainly grieved tremendously for her dad, and she still does. But it wasn't the same way that she grieved for her grandfather, because I think her participation in his care and her understanding of his death made the grieving process a little bit gentler or a little mm-hmm. bit smoother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've often thought her reaction to her grandfather's death, I mean, while it was a big loss, because she wasn't there, whatever her imagination had conjured up about what death looked like or what happened when he died, it must have been very upsetting to her.
And I agree with you. Right. You know, the other interesting thing is that when my mother died just 6 weeks later, Sarah was not present. She was back in Albuquerque. So I brought my mother into Albuquerque, and it just so happened that the crematorium was on the same block as the day program that Sarah goes to. And so I went down and picked Sarah up and brought her back to the crematorium. And she asked me to open the box so that she could see her grandma. Mm. And I think that displays too her newfound level of comfort with death and with seeing a body. Mm-hmm. And I think it was important to her to see her granny again, to actually look in and see that she was there in the box and that she had passed. And then Sarah wrote a message on the outside of the box that she loved her. But Sarah, what you did for us was such a gift. It truly was, to come and help our family become comfortable with the whole idea of a home funeral, and then to be able to do it as successfully as we did.
It was an honor to be a part of it, and I just am so grateful, you know, to be family.
Thank you.
Yeah. How many years were you and Mark married?
Oh my gosh, I can never remember. Mark or I, neither of us could ever remember the date of our wedding anniversaries. And in fact, the way that we celebrated was to say, "Nana, I remembered, you didn't." I think 36 years.
Uh-huh.
Not long enough.
Not long enough. Yeah. And he was only
71.
Oh, he was 71 when he died.
Yeah, he was 71 okay. when he died. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Still, not long enough.
Not long enough, no.
When we first started talking about recording this episode, you made a request that I play Lifeline. And this is a song I wrote for my sister Rebecca when she was diagnosed with breast cancer back in 2007. But I know it also holds some special meaning for you.
It's one of my favorite songs, of the songs that you have written. I had you sing that song for Mark and for me when a member of our community sponsored a fundraiser for Mark. Mark was involved in a lot of clinical trials, and the oncologist who was treating him had said, "You know, I don't know whether these clinical trials will benefit you, but they will benefit the men who come behind you." But those trials involved us making multiple trips to San Antonio, Texas, and then later on, multiple trips to Las Vegas. So this fundraiser that was organized for us was a real lifesaver, because it gave us the money that we needed to make all those trips. And it was so wonderful to have you and Tim there and to have you sing that song. I know that song touched everyone who was in that audience on that day.
That was a wonderful day. And here's Lifeline from my album For All This.
Mm-hmm. Please hold on. That big wild beast that took over you can't even touch the part that is true. You've got the force of the ocean and the tide pulling.
Well, Gwen, I'm so grateful for you for sharing this story. And, you know, I really feel so strongly that things like this podcast are getting out and normalizing these stories, letting people know what their choices are. And while the laws around funeral care are different in every state, it's still legal in every state to care for your own, to, you know, have custody of that body for as long as the family feels is necessary. And so we share our stories. And I love the fact that you have friends that have heard your story and they have gone ahead and taken that route themselves.
I'm really happy that they've been able to do that. And I have shared with people that I am happy to share my story with anyone that they think would like to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again, sweetie.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Love you.
Love you.
A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for families who choose to care for their own loved ones after death. Visit our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, please tell a friend and be sure to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home was written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our cover art is designed by Linda Curray, production assistance by Tim Howell. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home.
I want to be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens, I know you'll gently lay me in the ground and take the next breath take me.